The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Geeks Under the Influence podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of RVA Magazine, Loot Crate, Amazon.com, or their employees. Listener discretion is advised. Fuck off if you don't like it.
Hey geeks, how's it going? Mike the Hobbit Bigot here of Geeks Under the Influence podcast. And next to me on my left is the lead vocalist and stand-up bassist for the Jersey metal billy band, the Silverhounds. Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
Not a problem. My pleasure being here.
Yeah, I'm glad that you actually were down here in Virginia so we could talk about some of the new stuff going on.
Briefly, but still here.
Hey, long enough for us to go over the EP, the new videos that have that have come out from that as well. And we're going to talk about that and more on this interview with Dan of the Silverhound. So welcome.
Geeks Under the Influence.
Can you tell that I've been listening to this?
Actually, I know we had talked about the podcast, but I was not aware that you had actually listened to the episodes.
Oh, yeah, no. Everything that anyone hands to me, be it a card or a CD, it goes in somewhere, and then we pop it in and we listen to it.
So you're going to have a bunch of like nerdcore rappers approaching you after doing this interview, being like, do you want to listen to my EP?
I'm always down to listen to new music or anything, like anything that fills in gaps while you're on the road and stuff. I was a fan of it.
Yeah.
But then, like, you know, you have all the people in the band that just fall asleep through all of it, or they're not into like geek culture as much as I am. So they're just like, oh, it's good. And then they just
zone out.
Driving. Yeah. I'm the asshole that's like listening, like intently, like, no, he got his nerd credentials are completely wiped.
Well, shit.
No, I'm kidding. Nothing bad.
No, I've heard similarly from Chris, the guitarist of the Creepazoids, is a tattoo artist, and he's played a few episodes on the on the speakers at work, much to the chagrin of their...
like the other people working
so their clients. They're coming in.
All the clients aren't like, okay.
We're talking about like, you know, giving each other hand jobs or something silly. And, you know, there's all these people getting I heart my husband tattoo. Being like, what is happening right now?
So, this is a family establishment.
Now, speaking of like people listening to your stuff, have you had any circumstances of like family members or like family friends that have heard like your music and had kind of a different approach to it than you do?
Oh yeah, my mom. As best as I can put it, love you, mom. She's obviously not a fan, at all, but she'll be supportive now. I mean, that was kind of a little tough thing for her, I guess, because I didn't want to be the typical, you know, whatever it was that they wanted me to be. Mm-hmm. Oh, you should be a doctor or a lawyer.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not going to pan out the way you want.
I just
want
to do rock and roll shit with my friends.
But she's also like heavily religious and...
So you singing about evil shit and...
Well, here's the thing, actually. I kind of go out of my way not to do that or go down that path.
Yeah.
And it's nothing like forced, you know, mm-hmm. or intentional. It's just that never really interested me. Everything else, everyone else has already done it. But there's a couple of like, there's obviously a couple of songs where it's like the whole nature of death.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm like taking it back now to like our first full length Nevermore. Mm-hmm. That was obviously not a very religious album at all.
No, not really.
You know, just like, you know, who we are, where we are, you know, approaching death.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And, you know, all the aspects of it. And then she was not happy with that. She was like,
I can just imagine your mom listening.
There's a heaven, okay?
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Just, your mom sitting down with headphones on, listening to like Drink Till You Die, being like, Daniel, I did not raise you this way. speaking of your albums, you've got a EP that came out this year.
Yes.
Earlier this year.
Auguries.
Auguries, which I looked up means like an omen for the future.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't
matter if it's bad or good.
It's just something.
Something, yeah.
Is that kind of in relation to kind of progressing as musicians or just personal life stuff?
A good mix of both, but mostly because of what we are now as opposed to what we first started out as.
You're a little heavier than you were when you first started.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, by like... 85% more metal.
Yeah, was there a point where you just said fuck it and just decided to start incorporating it more?
Yeah, all right. I know these were points that we were eventually going to reach and shit.
Oh, there's no real list.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Just
no, it's like when we first started out, you know, we were mainly just a psychobilly-ish band mm-hmm. with some rockabilly thrown in there because we were mainly doing like, you know, well, not, yeah, like covers or just goofing around on like, you know, demos, playing riffs and stuff and mm-hmm. stuff that we, well, mainly at the time, the drummer Tim, that he and I were familiar with, and Derek, the guitarist, he's totally new to this. Never in his life had he even heard anything like it.
Mm-hmm.
He was mainly the metalhead.
I remember hearing a conversation with Derek of the Creepazoids about how they were the dueling Dereks about getting the Flying V guitars.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Well, see, Derek's been actually our Derek,
yeah.
Jersey Derek. He's been on Flying V's since like 20 years for 20 years.
Okay.
Or more. Yeah, they like, and plus he's a whole lot older. So.
Yeah, I was thinking
we've
about
got seniority.
There we go. See, he's been playing Flying V's for as long as
Richmond
Derek has been alive. So
pretty much
because he is a child.
But, not taken away from VA Derek's.
No. Oh, we can shit on him all we want. Like I love it. I was thinking about the incorporation of like the term metalbilly and also thrashabilly.
Yeah, thrashabilly was what people started calling us and hashtagging us while we were in California.
Okay.
Apparently that's it's got a bigger scene out there.
Okay.
Over here. Which kind of makes sense considering you've got the Strikers, they're more metal and
mm-hmm.
well, they're pretty thrashy too, I would say.
Also with all the thrash history of Southern California
exactly.
And even Northern California. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah,
that's... San Diego, actually Frisco. Frisco?
Well, Frisco, that's like Testament and Metallica, came out of that. So, I mean, yeah, that's kind of hard to dismiss that completely and go with totally different.
I was just trying to remember where the Strikers were from.
Oh, gotcha.
I'm that asshole. Yeah, those guys were an eye opener for me. So,
well, it's funny that there's been some like crossover hybrid music that's happened in the past, of course. I mean, you look at, you know, Brian Setzer incorporating swing with rockabilly.
Yeah.
You've got
brilliant, by the way.
Oh, absolutely brilliant. But also, as far as the kind of metal or hard rock mixed in with rockabilly, Headcat.
Yeah,
Headcat is a good example.
Let me actually further expound. I mean, apart from what I just said with the Strikers being full on, they're like, they're definitely full on. That's who we kind of like, not pattern ourselves after, but that's the direction that we end up always going in.
I gotcha.
Hell, like, I would say, like, early Coffin Cats,
okay.
Drunk in the Daylight. That was metal. And it was very different, too, at the time. Now, I'm drawing a blank now, trying to just think. Long day.
Not a worry.
But
yeah, I pretty much got you to come over here the same day that you
got in.
Yeah.
But no, it's like where it's at right now, there still isn't that much in terms of, like, hybridization. There's not much in terms of variety. And I'm not saying that to be, you know,
like elitist or anything.
I'm not. I'm like not at all. It's like it's set in its ways and
mm-hmm.
for a reason, and a reason that I totally understand. You know, it's like, you know, you have blues, for example. It
mm-hmm.
follows this rigid structure. The minute you stray too far from that, it's no longer the blues.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't sound like the blues, and it, you know, maybe there'll be some feel
mm-hmm.
of the blues in there, but it, you know, generally, you know, if you're stray too far from it, then you're no longer the blues.
Yeah.
And well, in this case, it's like you have with psychobilly already being such a weird hodgepodge of stuff and how it's so varied in there, but there is still kind of a certain, like, you know, pattern that you kind of fit.
Mm-hmm.
And with the bands that I had previously mentioned and then us coming into the mix, it does kind of, you do end up dividing some people, you know.
Yeah.
On it.
Well, and also just musically speaking, you know, you mentioned blues, a lot of the rock and roll based stuff, like, you know, punk rock and rockabilly that you're incorporating is more that kind of blues scale, whereas when you go into metal, you're doing more classical scale
yeah.
stuff mixed in, which...
Oh, yeah. Hey, awesome that you know that.
Yeah. I play bass, so not really a musician. But
no, but it's still more than enough to understand, and that's
yeah,
really the point.
Yeah.
And here's what I like to call it, right? You know, your average listener, they're not going to be able to quantify that, but they will still be able to detect it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't ever fake out an audience.
No.
Ever. they will know when you're sincere and when you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even at the most basis level, they don't have to fully understand it, but they will just know somewhere inside they will know. So that's why it's like, you try to pull the wool over somebody's eyes, they will fucking see right through you.
Yeah.
So, especially in metal.
You know, yeah. I mean, oh, and they will not hold their tongues most of the time.
Yeah, no, they're very vocal.
Speaking of being the hybrid type band that's incorporating both metal and psychobilly and punk and all that stuff, have you had any kind of trouble crossing into those very niche genres? Because I know metalheads can get really like serious about their specific genre of metal. Same with the rockabilly kids, you know, or the psychobilly cats, just on what is okay and what isn't.
See, here's the thing that I love about the metal community in particular. They're all about their little subgenres and stuff, but they tend to be a lot more open to newer things.
Okay.
We were accepted like wholeheartedly, pretty much.
Excellent.
Like almost every metal show that we played, both from it being something that I'd never seen before and them also appreciating what it was that we were doing. You know what I mean? Like throwing a bunch of like, you know, Dragon Force-y solos over like, you know, early Metallica thrash style stuff, you know, things like that.
Wait, so you're saying there isn't normally rockabilly bands that are doing 3 minute like metal solos in the middle of it? No, okay.
At least in those scales, right? And then, like, you know, they've actually been a little bit more open to that. Like, obviously, you're going to have somebody that's a little bit more outspoken. And it's funny that you mentioned sort of that, too, because I think we started collecting our first crop of haters, which is fine. You know what I mean?
It's bound to happen.
You can't win over everyone. But someone compared my vocals to Trivium.
Ooh.
And I'm just like, I mean, I personally have never really listened to him.
Yeah.
But the thing is, though, like, I know that a lot of people do like him, just as much as a lot of people hate him. So it's like, I guess that can be good for some people then, right? That's how I rationalized it. But I'm just like, is that, I mean, I guess.
That's a thing.
But, as far as the rockabilly community goes, that's been a little bit more divisive. It really depends on the kind of show that you're at, I would like to say. Like, car shows, generally, you're out. You can't really do stuff like that when people are there really just for the cars. Because, I mean, that's a large part of the rockabilly culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even psychobilly bands, every time we go and play, like, these huge car events and stuff like that, we've also noticed that they kind of struggle a little bit more, too.
Because,
I mean, like, by naturally, that genre kind of lends to the showmanship of it all. You know, like,
sure.
the spectacle, if you will. And people aren't there for the spectacle. They're there for the cars, you know, they're there for the pinup girls and stuff like that. So you're really just background noise. And yeah, every now and then you're going to get a good show and it, or at least the car shows where they separate it. You know what I mean? Where they have that, like, you know, Heavy Rebel Weekender. We just did the Rat's Nest Run-In, which was amazing.
Nice.
And they had like their own thing, like for the night, like at nighttime when it's dark. But they, generally speaking, that's been a little bit tougher to crack because it does also follow a very rigid kind of set of rules that we tend to, we don't even bend them, we straight up just break them, you know. And like, I can't stop us from progressing. That's not even all on me. It's evolved over time because of drummers, for example, or now that we've explored every avenue that we could with the previous works, like, you know, what else is there to do? Like, the only way that I can see moving forward is we sounded like this, which is already different. Let's keep going with it.
Well, like you were saying, you know, fans, they can tell when you're being genuine and when you're not.
Yeah.
And if you're doing the same exact thing because you figure that's what they want to hear, it's not going to be genuine.
No, it's not. They can seriously detect that.
Yeah.
It's like they know when you're phoning it in.
Yeah.
And that's the last thing you want to be. You don't want to be phony.
Oh, dude. Dad jokes are my category here.
I had to.
Talking about the rockabilly like interest in the Silverhounds, I think a lot of that, being somebody that's we partied at Heavy Rebel together.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There is many definitely. I don't know if it's just necessarily age group or I think that's part of it, but it's also just maybe approach to that subculture. There's people there that are stoked about the rockabilly and the country bands.
Yeah.
And anything that's outside of that little area, they're not really feeling.
Well, I wouldn't even say that they're not feeling it. More like they're just not there for it.
Yeah.
That, to me, I like to make that distinction. makes me sleep easier at night.
There we go. But no. there's a lot of different bands that play. Like, I mean, yeah. the Everymen are doing like weird kind of like banjo punk stuff. And there's even been a couple like actual close to metal bands play. Like the Seduction is great.
Yeah, the Seduction was great.
And of course, then there's, you know, our buddy Crump, who, you know, does the intro music for this podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't know, even know what to categorize because your experiment has.
Trash rock?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
He just called it a bar band, is the way he put it.
Oh, no, they're more than that.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, yeah, part of it is kind of what you expect from a genre, and if it's outside of that, you're uncomfortable with it. And there's just some people like that no matter what the genre is.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are cases where that old saying goes, like, the nail that sticks out gets hammered down stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That can sometimes come into play. That's why it's like you want to stick out, but you don't want to stick out too much.
Yeah.
So you try to cater to, like, you know, difference between catering and pandering to the audience. You just want to make sure that when you're on there on the stage and you look into the crowd and you go, oh, everyone's here. Everyone here is mainly for the more rockabilly, psychobilly stuff. Mm-hmm. Then you kind of just adjust the set list to be some of the older stuff.
Sure.
Well, I mean, we also have a new one where it's straight up like rockabilly.
Yeah.
But we just haven't really played it live yet.
Yeah. yet. Just getting there. Yeah. There's something to be said for sticking out like a sore thumb. That's kind of, in my opinion, kind of the most American thing that you can do. I mean, America itself is this like melting pot of different ideologies and backgrounds and like cultures that are thrown together into this, what they, you know, call the melting pot.
And so, here, I actually mentioned this before, and it's funny that you say that because this also kind of came up. What's interesting is, like, let's be real here, to be an American is insanity. Like, for real. As an American Asian, like, I mean, I grew up here. This is all me. Like, you know, my culture is this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like we are literally a culture that glorifies an individual and the creative, you know, work that they put out. At the same time, we punish them for it immensely. We beat them down. We devalue their work on a daily basis.
Well, especially with social media the way it is now.
Social media.
It's so easy to just
pan out their artists, for example.
Your previous album was better, or, you know, like...
Well, not even like that. I'm talking about, like, even, like, you know, on the business level of it, or, like, you know, you know, funding it.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was talking about content creation and stuff, and, like, people getting paid out, like, you know, that's a huge problem happening right now on Facebook and in YouTube. You know, a lot of people aren't getting the content. Not a lot of people aren't getting paid for their content, and these are people that are creating and performing and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
YouTube has actually recently changed a lot of their rules.
A lot of their rules about that. Yeah, and people are losing out on a lot of money. And some people that actually, it was one of those new things too, where at the time, it's like you never would have ever expected people to be able to make a living off of YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And it started happening, and then they were happy, and then that bubble sort of burst once the rules started to change.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now even like, say, for example, coming on to like paying artists for their work. Like, you know, on YouTube, not YouTube, I just said YouTube, like, you know, Spotify, iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we can sell the stuff, but I mean, how many people still go out of the way to go and pirate something? And, like, you know, that's all well and good when an artist wants to share the music and stuff. But now, coming from someone that creates that content, it's like, hey, throw me a couple bucks so I can continue doing this. Well, is that going
to
happen?
Hard part with streaming, like Spotify and everything, is it is nice to be able to get that music out there and show up on suggested lists and everything, but... You're getting pennies.
Yeah, pennies.
I mean,
best.
Yeah, at best. Yeah.
And like, I like how like Spotify goes, yeah, but we paid out this many artists for the this much to this many artists. It was like some crazy number.
Yeah, but you're talking like Kanye and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, no, and God forbid you got some Taylor Swift haters or lovers. Who knows? Like, she brought up some very good points when she retracted all her music from Spotify. She was looking out for the artist. I mean, obviously she still had like, you know, full label backing and everything like that. So like, who is she to say that? She's like, that doesn't make whatever she said wrong at all. And you know, that's, like I said, we are a culture that glorifies that, glorifies the artists, you know, a performer, creativity. We tell you, oh, you have to be creative. That's what makes us great. And it's true, but we are also punished for it, like severely punished for it.
Well,
they don't give a shit about you.
It's that gray area where you can be creative and different to a point, people will appreciate it. But if you're a little bit, like you said, the nail sticking out.
It's hard to make a living,
yeah.
And yeah, when the nail's sticking out.
Yeah. Speaking of, like, in addition to the, you know, the metal and the rockabilly kind of being incorporated into the music, you're also, I don't know if you know this, an Asian man.
Really?
Wait, I normally, I don't normally pick up on that kind of stuff, but you know, I think I got it that time. But being in a, in two cultures that,
yes.
I guess it depends on kind of the part of the world you're in, as well as kind of what, you know, festival or city you're in. But there's a smaller contingency of Asian dudes playing stand up bass in a rockabilly band. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how short you are as a stand up bass player.
Yeah, I'm pretty damn short.
Yeah, no, but...
Well, actually, no, not really. I've seen people that are either my height or smaller.
Playing the stand-up bass?
Yeah.
Where there was that 12-year-old kid that murdered at Rebel a couple years ago.
Yeah, Rebel. And some of the the female players.
Yeah, true.
They're usually my height, so...
No, but as far as the...
The only thing I got on them is privilege.
Oh!
Nah, some of them totally, like, dust. I will tell you, man.
That's why,
like,
I love that. The bass slap off at Rebel is always an absolute blast watching everybody playing. But as far as coming from a kind of minority side within the subculture, has that been an additional struggle for you in addition to being a hybrid band?
Yeah, it's like I said, it's nothing that has been too, like, outright, but you are always going to know when it's
pronounced
veiled.
Alt-right.
Damn. Yay. Yeah, you weren't kidding when you were talking about the dad jokes.
Yep, nope, it happens. It happens.
No, it's like, you know, you do stuff and sometimes you'll hear people talking.
Mm-hmm.
Or like they'll pass off some, like, really, you know, offhanded comment, which is meant to be praised on their end, but it's like kind of just like, what do you mean for an Asian dude?
Yeah.
Or, oh, I'm the Asian this. It's like, nah, dude.
No, that's not really... That doesn't come into play
Asian
so much.
That.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
just that. So, but you know what I mean? Who am I to knock their discovery? Maybe this might open doors to them, I guess, being exposed to it a little bit more. Because like most of the time, like, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, it's very rare that I see anybody in our genre that looks like me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are. I'm not taking away from anyone that is. In fact, I'm saying... Keep
Yay.
Fucking doing it. Yeah,
yeah, right.
Please get out there and keep on doing it. Like, don't be afraid to stand out. Because on a cultural level, I would like to say, or even like by the stereotypes that, you know, fall into it, we aren't, like, you know, Asian guys aren't very out there. They're not usually outspoken. They're almost never the front men, for example.
Well, even in
there
in,
are some, but
even like in film and TV, you don't see a whole lot.
You don't see a lot
of representation.
You know what it You don't see the proto male, like the alpha dog Asian guy. That's almost never a fucking thing. You don't ever get to see the Asian guy physically get intimate with... I don't know how to say this without sounding derivative, but no, it's true. I think there's like a trope for it. Like
the
pretty
alpha
white,
love interest in the...
Yeah, no, it's the white trophy, which is like usually the, you know, buxom blonde, blue-eyed blonde. And that's usually... well. That's actually still one of the biggest problems right now in Hollywood, but like that's generally seen as the end goal for like most like action movies or whatever have you. There's always like some kind of love interest, and you don't even see any Asian characters get like, you know, get any of that. The one exception being Glenn from Walking Dead, but even that, I have my qualms about that because I know you guys, I think, are fans of the comics.
Yes. Oh, or a number of us. I wouldn't speak for all 50-plus panelists, but
it's like Glenn was more or less, at the time, the right-hand guy in the comics. He was literally what Daryl was.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they literally split his character in half. One went to Glenn and the other one became Daryl. It's like... Why'd you do that?
It's like those movies where one person splits into two and there's the good one and the bad one.
Yeah, yeah.
And like Glenn and
And now this one, they gave all the super alpha male characteristics to the white guy and then they left all the meandering guy or the guy that's just brilliant and a great tactician. But it's like, you know, in the comics, he was way more than that.
And also a badass.
He was a fucking badass.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's around the time where I was like, I can't watch this anymore. Frank Darabont had a great vision. You guys are fucking ruining it.
So. But I think hopefully a lot of the, you know, movie studios and the like are starting to recognize that with Black Panther coming out Wonder Woman.
Oh,
that,
that's looking so good.
Oh, Black Panther? Yeah, yes. Panther. Oh, I'm super freaking excited. And when they got the director of, I think it was Creed, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which was an I was really apprehensive about there being a follow-up to Rocky, because that seems like a cash grab.
Tell me that movie brought man tears to my eyes. I love them.
When he is helping Rocky up the steps at the end of it, I'm sitting there just heart.
Yeah, and they're playing the theme song all like low-key and everything.
God damn it.
Oh, my God. So, dude, my favorite scene, this literally, well, there are two scenes that really played on my fucking heartstrings, and it was when he's running. And then when he's finally getting to understand himself and like mm-hmm. who he is and where he's at, and they're playing that song, just building up, and then the fucking rap part comes on, and then it suddenly just cuts out, and it's like quiet, and you hear like, and then you hear the chick singing, and it's all slow motion while he's running, and then all the bikes come up. I was like crying tears.
When there's four-wheelers like doing circles around him and he's in the middle like, yeah! And I'm like, this is so corny and so wonderful. It was so wonderful.
It was so great.
Yeah. But
and then the thing that got me the most, though, here's what I'm getting to it. I'm super nerding out right now. I'm really nerding out
right now. This is a safe place for nerding out.
But, and it's the thing that a lot of people just say, it flew right over their heads when they're in the ring in the final fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the last round, I was like, no, I gotta call it. It's like, no, I gotta prove it. I was like, prove what?
Yeah.
And then he's like, that I'm not a mistake. I was like,
That was all of that, like,
all
anger,
that
everything
anger
for
just
the
finally
whole time.
Came out.
Yeah.
Like, the bitterness, like, who am I in this fucking world? Like, you know, I am following in the footsteps of, like, a legend, living in the shadow as, like, this thing that was not even supposed to be. It's like, in just one line, they encapsulated that entire feeling, and it was so amazing how it was just delivered, and like everything drowns out for like a brief second, and then he's just looking at him, Rock is just looking at him like, and like it dawns on him, it dawns on him, and I was like, oh my God,
that the real fight wasn't in the ring, it was in his heart.
That deserved to be called the Rocky movie.
Absolutely.
Like, absolutely. So
that's why I was like, I would love Stallone to be in the next one, but he doesn't have to be.
He doesn't have to be now because like the torch was very effectively passed. And this is, it's the Rocky spirit. That's like, you know, who it is. That's what it is.
The true underdog.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing with Creed and the director now going on to do Black Panther.
Coogan.
Getting a female director for Wonder Woman. Yeah, Hollywood is starting to wise up that maybe instead of like rehashing stories that have been told time and time again, and they're running out of ideas, there's entire groups that are underrepresented in film and television and music that don't have the same opportunities.
You need to see it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
You can rehash a story, but how about from a different perspective?
Well, different perspective makes it a new story. Yeah, even if it is kind of the same tropes, I mean, it's still going to,
like the viewpoint, it does definitely like changes. I mean, that I think that's one of the reasons why Wonder Woman did so well too, because I mean, I still love what you hate and you hate what you love, was it? And if you love something, you will pick it apart.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Wonder Woman. Man, I did have a lot of issues with it too.
I had a few, but there was also that, you know, I got the chance to see that with my girlfriend and watching her like crying at parts of like these empowerment moments that are a little bit on the cheesy side. And I look over and she's just beaming. I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I'm
going to shut my dumb mouth. And I loved it. I felt that there were movies before and shows after that did the whole empowerment thing without all the pomp and flash. And they did it so well. Like, I mean, for example, Fury Road.
Oh, God, yes.
And a lot of people want to be like, oh, we're going to detract from it. It really wasn't that feminist. Like,
it's pretty.
Are you fucking kidding me?
She
was
the
badass.
Yeah.
Like, they went out of their way to not explain shit to you. Mm-hmm. They didn't fucking hold your hand. It was just that. And that's what empowerment is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And she was the one that was looking out for these people. And even those people had something to do and say. In fact, I think the brilliance of Fury Road is like it was lost on so many people. It was like a good amount of the background characters themselves served as like the Greek chorus.
Mm-hmm.
So they were the people giving subtle exposition or like, you know, echoing sentiments of the characters when the characters weren't speaking. And that's what they were. Well, the many wives. I mean, not the many mothers. Wait, yeah.
The mothers. Wives.
I'm talking about the girls that she was saving. Like, I forgot what they were called now. Losing cred.
Oh, well, crap. Yeah. We're gonna have so many
Glow.
Comments.
Tell me you watched Glow.
We're not all the way through it, but
okay.
we're a good good
how many,
about halfway what through, probably.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I think I can't say anything because, like, I got to tell you, there was one moment in that about, I think, the second or third to last episode where it was this, like, my heart just was exploding.
Yeah.
It was so good. And it was just like the way it was done. It wasn't, it starts off a little with cheese, but with, like, for a purpose, right? You're going to notice it gets more serious as it gets along, as it goes on, and more, like, deep. They start exploring, like, the characters, what makes them tick, and no longer are they people that you love to hate or hate to love.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're full-blown characters, and there's, like, a speech that someone delivers. God, you know, I don't want to spoil it. I just know it was so good, and it made me proud.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is amazing. Like, you know what I mean? As a guy, I can really appreciate this. And I love the fact that they're giving this different perspective. And honestly, that's what art is, right? It's mm-hmm. supposed to be a different perspective. And if people were more exposed to it, people were more open to it even, they will be able to see from a different perspective. There won't be any more of that, like, you know, that alienation. It's like, oh, why are they doing it for this? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, I can't relate. Well, here's now your opportunity to relate. Now you're hearing a voice not delivered in such a ham-fisted way because mm-hmm. it was written well and written by, like, you know, a team of women, for example, that mm-hmm. knew the troubles and the struggles, but they're not going to beat you over the head with it either because they're also good writers.
Yeah.
You know, and then that different perspective, I think that's what we need. And I don't know, it's just like something like that. I was like, this is awesome. Like, you know, fucking amen.
Seen a common theme throughout our conversations about music and TV and movies is that there are a certain contingency of people that they want things to be the same way they always have.
Oh, yeah.
And they're the people that will appreciate the remakes of a thing. Yeah. That, and that they want the same kind of story where everything ends up happy at the end, or, you know, kind of the paces of the story. Just like knowing the kind of the sound that you're going to expect from a certain type of band. And then there's another contingency that wants that different perspective, wants to have a different insight to a style of music or to a different culture or sex or sexual identity.
Yeah.
And I think that's, my personal opinion is that a lot of that comes with just generationally, that as the generations progress, there's a lot more inclusion in the generations coming up. And as that progresses, there are people in the right spots to tell those stories.
Yeah.
Whether it be
reaching
through lyrics
or singularity.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess you're kind of doing your part on the music side of things with, like, incorporating different styles of music and just kind of doing your own version of the things that you love.
Yeah. And then, like, honestly, that's if you make music on an artistic level, I guess, because that's really there, like, you know, some people that will do it on a commercial level, which is fucking just as, you know, valid, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Like, you're making jingles or you're working for a TV show and you're writing music for that. I mean, that's perfect. But I'm saying when you have to deliver something on a personal level, like, you know, your own work, and then you're mm-hmm. putting it out there for people, you can't be dishonest. You can't make anything that you yourself can't listen to. So when we write, you know, when we start putting demos, it's like, what am I loving right now? What am I going to put out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also, yeah, on the other side of that, it's like, how can we make sure that doesn't sound too far from what we were to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
That's always going to be the struggle, that push and pull.
I've listened to some, like, there's a synth rock album by Bad Religion out there somewhere.
Oh, yeah?
Same with Anti Nowhere League put out some, like, weird 80s synth rock album too. TSOL had a hair band record called Hit and Run. I mean, there's a number of bands that have tried that.
Yeah.
Hell, even Slayer had a new metal record when that was the big thing. And the fans will destroy you if you get too far off.
Yeah,
it's
at that point they lose sight of even, like, you know, intent. And in my opinion, I think intent is really that's the driving force. And when you lose that intent or you neuter it,
mm-hmm.
that's when people will fucking tear you apart, man.
Yeah. So
the teeth come out.
it's so weird to be trying to do your own thing, but at the same time wanting an audience that's appreciating it at the same time. That's such a delicate balance most of the time. And if there was an actual formula to it, somebody would have figured that out by now and gotten
it. There is a formula to it.
Well, there's...
Yeah, but it's super nuanced.
Yes.
And it changes with every audience.
Absolutely.
It changes with every genre. And
yeah, you're not going
like,
to get the same response in Boise as you are in, like, Tallahassee. Yeah. It's
exactly.
just, yeah, different thing entirely.
And genres even, you know.
We talked a bit about your nerd cred, as you put it. has your appreciation... We talked outside before recording that you were... you know, collecting comic books, had a bunch of Deadpool books as well as I'm sure
before
a bunch
the
of
movie.
Others. Before the movie, yes.
Like, we're talking like 90s, man.
Did any of that kind of your nerd-centric interest growing up have any effect on kind of your musical directions?
Yes and no. Generally, it kind of existed in its own little
bubble.
Compartmentalized.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess, I don't know if you've noticed this, but a lot of the lyrics for our work, it's all written in like old modern English-ish. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say full on, but definitely it lends itself to some of that because you kind of have to, I'm not dumb it down, but you have to make it a little bit more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Edgar Allan Poe, was a writer and his prose was brilliant.
Did you just say that was a writer in case somebody listening was like, I don't know.
No, I was like, I'm saying that.
You know, yeah,
that,
no, I know.
That's a fucking writer.
It's like, who's this Edgar? Is it a friend of his? I don't know.
Isn't it Edward Allan Poe?
No, that's a sparkly vampire. That's a different thing.
But no, stuff like that. That's where that other nerd side was, all the books and stuff, and reading a lot definitely lent itself to. It informed a lot of stuff. Actually, one of the. You know what? I'm not going to reveal too much about the secrets.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. No, it's like a
GY exclusive.
No, it's like definitely that kind of pokes its head in there like a lot. Embarrassingly so sometimes. Like, you know, it's like, I'm pretty sure someone out there is going to like, really? It's written in that sort of prose. Well, let me pick it apart now. Here are all your, this is where you get everything wrong. I'm
but
like,
that's,
okay.
That's the hardest thing with putting anything out there is that there's going to be somebody that's going to use that as almost ammunition. And you just got to be like, oh.
It's like the difference between the use of the word thy and thine. You fucked it up.
Well, I love using whilst instead of while. Whilst. I love it. I absolutely love it because often it's not as often used as it used to be. And so when throwing it in, it draws attention to that segment of the statement.
Yeah.
And I love that. But
context.
Yes.
It's important.
Context is always important.
That's why English is the most god-awful language to learn. There's so many dead words in it now.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just ridiculous how ever-changing and evolving it is.
Which is kind of a beautiful thing at the same time.
Yeah.
That, you know, the language in a lot of languages, not just English, is fluid. You know, it's constantly. I mean, Jiggy is in the dictionary now. You know, it's not a language that I tend to use. I don't jiggy with it most of the time myself.
You know what though?
Sounds
in
exhausting.
Defense of all that, and because I know let's be real here. There can be a lot of people that hate on rap, for example. But it's like, are you kidding me? It's like, what do you think Shakespeare was doing back in the day?
Mm-hmm.
He was making up words willy-nilly. Like, it was just insane.
Well, Poe did the same thing. He made up
stuff,
too.
Like, even his prose, you could say, like, you know, back in the day, that wasn't really how you were supposed to fucking write at all. And you know, his syntax was all off.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So, but, just so our audience understands, you're comparing yourself as being as prolific as Poe and Shakespeare. Is that what you're...
Absolutely.
Yep, no, I figured, okay.
Including the dying in a gutter somewhere. That's eventually going to be me.
It will be in Winston-Salem during Heavy Rebel, probably.
Yeah,
but.
Probably.
Real quick before we get done with this, your musical stuff isn't entirely just Silverhounds. I know you do some stuff with the Screaming Rebel Angels.
Yeah.
Do you have any
at the time, no. Well, now, not really as much, because we're focusing now back on this.
Okay.
But I do also play with Screaming Rebel Angels. They are actually on tour in Europe right now, or I think they're actually coming back home today now.
Oh, nice.
I couldn't go on tour with them, though, because I had work.
You have like a real job, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a kind of a new job, too, so I got time off.
Yeah.
If this was like last year, when I was in my old position, I was like, 3 weeks, peace.
Yeah. In Europe, just hanging out.
Yeah, just doing that.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do it this year. And like the timing was just bad.
Yeah.
So in the end, I just decided, hey, well, if I'm going to be here, I might as well just like focus on this. Let's shoot some music videos.
Yeah.
Let's do this and that.
Yeah, I wanted to mention the music videos. There's two off of this EP. There's a Way of the Wolf and The Teeth in the Darkness. Teeth in the Darkness is the one that just came out, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Released Friday.
Okay. So, yeah, just
Last week. I don't know when this is coming out.
But. this will probably be out a little bit later in the week. So about a week from when you guys are hearing this is when the video came out. And those are really the first videos that you guys have done, right?
Yeah.
I've seen some, like, you know, live footage and stuff, but like an actual real video.
We were kind of on hiatus for a bit, like, mm-hmm. and we did have another drummer that was able to, you know, play with us, and he actually came down here too a couple of times, Ed. The thing is that we couldn't actually commit to doing anything long term or anything like that because a lot of it was still kind of up in the air. He was a Silverhound through and through, and he still is. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we still love him. Nobody left on bad terms. It's just that life, the speed of life, you know, he ended up with a job where he worked from like 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., which means you are now
not able to
come out at yeah. all. There's nothing that you can do. And like, you know, even before that, too, it was like, you know, just finding the time and stuff. So mm-hmm. that was kind of like this weird dark period where we couldn't really progress. We ended up writing these songs, but that was really just the extent of it. And mm-hmm. There were more kind of on the way, but now we have to kind of take it back and stuff because we now have new drummer, Joe, and he's been the one that's been kind of helping us get right back on track. And it's been a while, so it is almost like you're starting anew. So what better way than to just start doing stuff that we wanted to in the past.
Sure.
But just never had either the drive or the time, you know what I mean?
Well, it's actually a little more fair to the new member of the band as well. If the interests or style some credence into the songwriting process as well.
Yeah. You know?
How many of the original members in Silverhounds?
Still two out of three.
Just still two out of three. Okay. So yeah. just the drummer has flipped yeah, around a couple times. What, so. Yeah. Okay. Are you guys doing any touring as of yet, or?
Yes, we are. Well, not like major, big, gigantic ones like we used to, but we are going back on the road, hopefully in December.
Okay.
We'll probably be swinging down here. I know we're looking.
I would appreciate if. Yeah.
Well, we're looking right now. It really depends on, I guess, who responds to what or where we decide to go, especially here in Richmond. I mm-hmm. do know I want to stop in Richmond.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be heading down to Florida. I think that's our anchor point. That's where we're going to swing around and then come back up. So depending on the routing, we'll see where we're at. Because if we have to come here on a Sunday, then obviously you know the one place that holds Sunday shows.
Yeah, yeah.
So that might be the place that we have to hit up.
So okay, yeah, I guess it depends on the place's schedules and yours. And yeah,
like
absolutely.
Where we're able to go.
I'm assuming all of that information is going to be available on your social media stuff on, was it silverhounds.com?
TheSilverhounds.com.
TheSilverhounds.com. Yeah. The is very
websites,
important.
Websites, yeah, the is so kind of important.
Without the, it's probably like a weird porn site for like mature audience, you know, like 65 plus or something. You
know? Or, I don't know, maybe a dog breeding site for all I know.
I'm thinking it's for like granny sex.
That's
Silverhound.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, to each their own.
Yeah. I mean, old people got to have sex too. Mm-hmm. I mean, so do you have any plans for any future music videos or are you just trying to work on more songs or?
Oh, we actually might decide to go back and film ones for older songs.
Oh, nice.
Kind of like, you know, bring it back up and stuff like, hey guys, by the way, we also have this full length that you haven't checked out yet.
Mm-hmm.
That could be one thing. I definitely want to do a story one. The problem with story videos is you have to pick and choose. You have to be very careful about which ones that you do because, like, you know, you want to highlight, for example, the song. For songs like The Way of the Wolf and The Teeth in the Darkness, you're not going to have a lot of time for a story there. Mm-hmm. You know, and also what story are you going to tell, really, that isn't already being told by the lyrics mm-hmm. and the ferocity of it. And a lot of it's just really a big middle finger to haters and assholes or people that think they're better than you. It's like, nah. Sorry, bud. You ain't. You're a man. No, you're a great guy. We're fucking beasts.
Nice.
Yeah, that was me totally just, you know, lording something over. But no, it's like we can't really do too much in terms of that. So we just stuck to it. You know, we'll let the music speak and just show us playing it. You know, give a taste of what the live show is kind of like. Because, you know, you've seen us live. We don't just stand there.
You guys make me exhausted just watching you guys up there.
So when you watch the video, that's kind of what the way we are when we're playing live.
Yeah.
So we figured, hey, you know, just do that. Except obviously it's more doctored up since it's like, you know, music video and stuff. But the first story one that we want to do, we do have ideas. The other problem now that I'm talking about that is finding the right song to do it to is also the budget because now you've got to get people involved, you know what I mean? Locations, for example, depending on what kind of video you want to do.
And like podcasting music, you don't tend to make a whole lot of money into stuff like video budgets.
Like I said before earlier today, it's like a budget of $36 went to The Teeth in the Darkness. Thank you, Black Blankets from Walmart.
Yeah, right. But
that's bed sheets.
But what do they say? Is that the mother of invention? What's that line?
Necessity
is the mother of invention. Yeah.
No,
so
that's very true.
Yeah, and honestly, we've come into that with the podcast as well, just trying to figure out how to make something work.
You know what? Honestly, that's where it also squeezes a lot of the inventiveness and the creativity. It's always a good thing when you put restrictions to something like that,
because
like it does. You got to start thinking outside of the box, and that's when you come up with some of the craziest shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean,
that's why a lot of writers enjoy a deadline, because it's like, okay, well, I have to get this done.
Work towards that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You leave it too open, and then I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why too it took us so long to even just come out with new stuff in general.
Yeah,
because since we were floating around, we just didn't know what we were doing, and at that point, it's like, well, what's the point of writing like all these songs when we don't even know who's going to be recording them or
yeah,
you know, or where we're going to go with it? And so now that. With the success of the last one, I mean, like, you know, that thing is, I'm not tooting my own horn here, but that's the most views and shares that we've ever seen. And it's kind of spurring. It's like, well, how do we keep the momentum rolling?
Mm-hmm.
How do we keep it going? So
momentum is key.
It is.
Very much.
Yeah, you rest, you rust.
Now, so. You talked about storytelling, and that actually brings me to like one of the, I'd like to do a goofy question during during an interview. This one being, you know, as far as telling stories, what would be a geeky property that you'd want to write a concept album around? Like if you just not worrying about like necessarily progressing the tone of the band or anything, but something that you think would be fun to kind of put together, just a few songs in a row that were all about the same subject.
Bobby, just retelling of the Wolfman.
Okay. I mean,
if you want to go super easy, I mean, we're the Silverhounds.
Yeah.
Like
that
the werewolf
thematically.
Based.
Yeah. Would work.
That would work
pretty well.
Kind of like a metal opera, I guess, of that.
I just want to hear you singing opera now about the Wolfman. Yeah, I think...
you know, shit like that. Or, fuck. Now, you did catch me off guard with
yes.
this one.
Yes, this is the one I catch you off guard with.
Well, I mean, it's not something that I really gave it much thought
yeah,
to.
Yeah, that's
obviously.
True. That's true. Well, you don't sit in the van on long trips being like, now what concept
album
would...
Oh, no, I sit in the van in the existential crisis. The only peace you get is from nihilism.
Oh, nihilism. It can be a beautiful thing on long road trips, for sure. Or also after a bad set. Like,
yeah,
I used to do stand-up, and it's just like, you know, nothing actually matters,
it's,
so it's fine. It's fine. All right. I'm going to tell our listeners and viewers as well to check out thesilverhounds.com for all of the links to their social media.
Facebook,
videos are on there, too.
Instagram. I was unaware of this. I think we might have a Snapchat too, apparently,
oh.
And I don't know who's operating it.
It's probably whoever's not driving, like just doing weird shit while you guys are sleeping in the van.
Although here, that might be still a good thing to, I guess, look into, but...
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to keep up with you kids.
Yeah, in your newfangled
your
social media apps. Yeah. But yeah, find all that stuff on thesilverhounds.com. Also, we're going to be posting links to all that in the notes for this episode. Also, you know, stay tuned to gypodcast.com for kind of a write-up on this interview, as well as, you know, information on when the Silverhounds are coming into town. These are buddies of ours. We're going to let you know when they're coming through this area. So check them out. Buy the new EP, Auguries. That's
Auguries.
I'm making it too complicated.
Yeah, you are. You know, it's fine, though.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, that could be one other way of pronouncing, kind of like salmon and salmon.
Oh, no. There's salmon is for Rushdie, and that's it.
but
yeah, and there's also the full lengths available on iTunes and Spotify all over the place.
All over, yeah, you can get it.
Even on Amazon.
Yes.
Which, if you do that, shop through the link at gypodcast.com so we get credit.
Yeah,
see, then we can both win
there
in that.
You go.
Yeah, so...
Do it that way, guys.
Thank you so much, Dan, for coming in and
let's do the both.
There we go. For coming in, talking a little bit about music
and
geeky
like
shit.
I said, awesome that I get to finally be on this thing.
Yeah, I'm actually just disappointed that you made the poor choice of listening to it previously. But
yeah,
you know,
the worst life decision ever.
I'm sure. All right, from all of us at Geeks Under the Influence, thank you guys for watching and join us or die. GUIPodcast.com
Mm-hmm.